Go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy to get 20% off your first month of cognitive behavioural therapy, with weekly sessions online with a therapist, in addition to worksheets, a journal, meditation and yoga videos, and unlimited messaging. There's strong evidence that CBT can help people who hoard, and accessing therapy online can be affordable and accessible. Find out more and get your discount at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy.
Now on Broadway, An Enemy of the People is a New York Times critic's pick. Jeremy Strong is one of the great actors of his generation, hails the Chicago Tribune in a performance the Wall Street Journal praises as powerfully affecting and bitterly funny. Michael Imperioli sets off sparks, cheers the Hollywood Reporter. Victoria Pedretti is luminous, raves variety. From director Sam Gold and playwright Amy Herzog, An Enemy of the People is urgent, electrifying, and haunting, declares USA Today. An Enemy of the People on Broadway through June 16th only.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Welcome to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. I am drowning in stuff and trying to find a way out. Listen as I explore the issues and delve deep as somebody profoundly affected by hoarding disorder. Find out more, including links to subscribe to the podcast and all of my social media, at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Finally, I am not a doctor. I am just a hoarder doing her best. So do seek professional support if and when you need it. Hey, how are you? I am good. I'm going to start this week with a review. I haven't started with a review for ages. And then I'm going to talk about the benefits of turning your chair around. All will be revealed. And then I will leave you with a top tip of the week. So let's do it. I got this lovely review from Begum on Apple Podcasts USA, and it says, "This is the absolute best podcast dealing with neurodivergence I've come across. That Hoarder is an amazing, talented and generous person who is curious and vulnerable about their own hoarding and mental well-being. It is so refreshing to hear the wisdom of someone who actually has a given condition rather than some neurotypical expert who hasn't actually walked a mile in our all too many shoes. This pod is the gold standard for mental health related podcasts, and That Hoarder has a lovely voice too. Brava." Thank you so much. That's so nice. I'm actually blushing. That's really nice to hear. Every bit of feedback is honestly so valuable. Like, 5-star reviews apparently help people to find the podcast. That's what podcasters always say anyway. But it might be that we all say it because we hear other podcasters say it. And somebody, we assume somebody said it first who actually knew what they were talking about. But as well as it helping other people find the podcast, it is also like, so nice to hear when you're tired and it's Thursday night and you haven't transcribed the episode yet and you've got a lot on and all of that. And it really keeps you going to have such lovely listeners who say such lovely things. So thank you. So today I am going to talk about the benefit of turning your chair around. I, as you know, have been working on the kitchen for what feels like forever. It's been a few months that I've been really focused in that room in terms of de-hoarding. And I'm at a point where it's a lot better and I'm also sick of the sight of it. I have had like a chair set up in the middle of the room and I will go in there and sit on this chair and just work a bit on getting rid of things or organising things or that kind of thing. And the other day I was in there and I was sitting on the chair and I was looking around thinking, I'm kind of losing interest in this room. I've been here too long. It's tiring me out. I don't know what to do. And then I had this idea. I turned the chair so it was facing the other direction. And suddenly, there was a room full of possibilities again. There was a room where I could look at the problem and start quietly in my head to start gradually working out ways to solve it again. And suddenly I was inspired again. This was the same room I've been working on for several months. But rather than the tired, oh no, not more pasta feelings that I'd been starting to have, suddenly I was like, oh, there's some recipe books I haven't sorted out yet. Oh, and those bags could at least all go into one bag to save, you know, to save space. And I started brimming with ideas again. And it got me thinking about how that shift in perspective, whether that's a physical shift in perspective by turning your chair around in the room you're getting a bit sick of, or whether it's a shift, a more of a mental shift in perspective, can really kind of re-energize us when we're in this marathon process of having a whole home, whether that's a studio flat or a 6, 12, 20 bedroom mansion. It's a long, slow process. And we need to keep ourselves motivated and kind of G'd up if we're going to keep going rather than just drop in a heap and give up. So I think there's something really powerful in starting to believe that we can do things differently. I think believing that different things are possible for us can be a massive leap, can't it? Like, I often sink into, this is just how I live. This is just how things are. Why am I trying to change it? This is just how things are. And I have to remind myself that just because things have been a certain way for a certain amount of time doesn't mean that they have to be that way forever. And if you're somebody who gets into a routine and does things in a certain way and has done for a long time, it can be really hard to remember that you can actually switch things up. You can actually do things a bit differently. And it doesn't have to be scary. You don't have to leap into the dark. You can edge your way and put the light on. Change and doing things in a different way and seeing things in a different way can be refreshing rather than terrifying if we let ourselves try. Because I can really limit myself based on my comfort zone. And I always think that's a great reason. That's out of my comfort zone. I don't do that. And I have defended comfort zones in my life before. I have argued that comfort zones are comfortable. Why would we want discomfort when we could have comfort? Surely it is logical and rational to stay in our comfort zone. But I've also come to believe over time that if we never stretch the edges of our comfort zone, I really believe that our comfort zones shrink. And so the space we exist in gets smaller and smaller and smaller in terms of what we allow ourselves to do or what we allow to happen in our life. Say you love eating pasta. I've already mentioned pasta. Let's stick with that. And you think, I really like pasta. I can have pasta all different ways. So pasta is my comfort zone. Why on earth would I want to eat anything else when pasta exists? And I can have pasta with veg. I can have pasta with fish. I can have pasta with chicken. I'm just going to eat pasta. That's my comfort zone. But then because you go, oh, I've put in a boundary there and now my life is happier at mealtimes because I'm eating lots of nice pasta. Then you might start going, well, actually, I don't love the combination of pasta and chicken, so I'm going to cut that out. And then you might go, well, I really like pasta with those vegetables. I don't love it so much with those vegetables. And so you cut that out. And before you know it, your comfort zone has become like a straitjacket and you have one way you can eat pasta and pasta is the only thing you can eat. Now that is, I'm not being totally literal there, but I think as we get comfortable in our comfort zone, we can start to cut out more and more and more that challenges us in any way. And before we know it, we're really, really restrained by what was meant to be a nice thing. And so I think that staying too much in our comfort zone can start to limit us. And I also think when we broaden our horizons a bit, what initially feels uncomfortable can quite quickly start to feel comfortable. Something that we never allowed ourselves to do, and we start letting ourselves do it, or we start braving. It's not that we wanted to and wouldn't. It's that we didn't dare, for instance. And then we start to do it, maybe slowly and gradually. Maybe we just leap in. And at first, this is scary and terrifying and bad. And then it becomes familiar and it becomes nice and it becomes something you look forward to. So I think if we never push the boundaries of our comfort zones, they shrink. But if we do push the boundaries of our comfort zones, they start to just loosen up a little bit and allow us to take more opportunities that arise. Because the big question we have to ask ourselves as hoarders who might have very strict rules about the way we do things is this approach working for us? And that's a hard question because there will at least be some elements of your comfort zone that are restricting you rather than making your life better. There will be certain elements of the way we're living our life that are not working in our favour. It's all very well saying, I am a great recycler. There's not a piece of paper that leaves my house that isn't in the right bin. There's not a piece of plastic that isn't sorted into the correct category. And that might be something we take pride in. It might be something we enjoy doing. It might be something we feel makes us a better person. But if that way of thinking about yourself and if that way of behaving means that you have a pile the size of the pyramids of unsorted plastic because you need to do it perfectly, is that approach working for you when you look at your life as a whole? If you don't want to waste or you don't want to get rid of things when they could be repaired and reused But what that means in real life is that you can't move around any of the rooms in your home easily. Is that approach to life working for you? If you know you feel guilty and scared by throwing things out, so you don't throw things out, that feels like a comfort zone in some ways. But when that means you're suffocating in your own home, is that approach actually working for you? Or do you need to turn your chair around and look at things from a different perspective and explore the idea of doing things a bit differently? So if you want to know a bit more about how you can gently explore some wider options that might feel scary, sure, but could actually lead to a vastly improved life, I'm going to go through some ideas with you. And remember that thing that what feels uncomfortable can feel comfortable surprisingly quickly. So one way to get ideas about ways you might improve the way you live your life, or change the way you live your life, or change the way you deal with your stuff, is to ask around for advice. Now, you don't have to say, I'm a hoarder and this is the problem I'm facing, to anybody. You can. But if you're like me and you don't really talk about that other than on a podcast, there are other ways to do it. So one option is to ask a quite general question. So I quite often see friends ask on social media, does anyone know what to do with old kids' clothes, for instance? Or does anyone have any ideas on what I could do with all my kids' artwork? Now, they don't give a whole backstory. They don't feel any need to say why they're asking the question. It's just quite a normal Facebook, especially. It's quite a normal Facebook question. And people reply. They don't make any assumptions. They just say, oh, such and such a charity shop is taking kids' clothes at the moment, or have you thought about wrapping birthday presents and Christmas presents in your kids' artwork, or did you know you could have it printed onto a placemat? I don't know. I think there are ways to ask questions without feeling like you have to spill your entire life story. You can just say, do you know, I've got loads, this is a very true one for me, I've got loads of like Tupperware type boxes. What on earth can I do with them all? Or even, does anyone need any Tupperware boxes? Because I've got loads. Those kind of questions are quite normal. And we might feel kind of hyper aware of them and hypersensitive. But most people would read that question and they wouldn't think deeply about why you were asking it. They would just say, oh, there's a community allotment near me and they're always after little plastic boxes for seeds and things. And so you can ask around in a way that doesn't involve disclosing the entire problem. But if that's still too hard, you could also ask yourself, what might other people advise? It sounds strange because you think, well, I don't know the answer, so how would I know what someone else would advise me to do? But it's worth trying anyway. There's often more in our brains than we're aware of. So like, what would a friend say if I asked them about this problem? Or what would a professional organiser say if I asked them about this issue? Or what might a therapist say if I brought this up? And sometimes putting yourself in the position of that other person, you might be surprised by the advice you can give yourself. Or, of course, you can ask yourself what you would advise a friend if they came to you. Often, when we do that, we've got a bit of compassion for our friend that we don't have for ourselves. And that can be quite kind of nice and healing. Another thing to ask ourselves is, what would be an alternative way to approach this task? If we've got something that we always do in a certain way and we're struggling, either because, like with me in the kitchen, you're just bored of it, or because you feel like maybe it's not that efficient, or because you feel like you're not making any progress, or for whatever reason, often we do things a certain way because that's how we do them. And we don't step back and say, is there a different way to do this? Is there a way I can frame this a little bit differently that might actually really help? There's an interesting concept from Zen Buddhism called beginner's mind. And the Zen Habits website, which I will link to in the show notes at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk, says this about beginner's mind. What is beginner's mind? It's dropping our expectations and preconceived ideas about something and seeing things with an open mind, fresh eyes, just like a beginner. If you've ever learnt something new, you can remember what that's like. You're probably confused because you don't know how to do whatever you're learning, but you're also looking at everything as if it's brand new, perhaps with curiosity and wonder. That is beginner's mind. And this is really interesting because when we've done something a lot, or when we've tried to do something a number of times, or when we've been doing it for ages, we consider ourselves, no, it's not that we consider ourselves experts, but we kind of act as if we are experts. This is the way to do this. And so we stop looking for alternatives. We stop looking at what might make this easier or more pleasant or go more smoothly or go quicker. Whereas if we approach it with beginner's mind, we are looking and exploring and trying to work it out. There is a quote from a book called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind that says, in the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities, but in the expert's, there are few. And if we can make ourselves approach a task as if it's the first time we've done it, you'd never know. First of all, it might feel like a different task to the one you're used to doing. But also it might open up slightly different, slightly better, or even just slightly varied ways of doing the same thing. Because the thing is, we are all predisposed to something called confirmation bias, which is yet another logical fallacy. As you know, they're my faves. Confirmation bias is something that everybody has, where we seek out and we pay attention to information that confirms what we already believe. So when we read an article or listen to a podcast or watch a video or have an idea that agrees with us, we think, there, that's proof, I'm right. But when we access information that disagrees with us or challenges us, we can dismiss it a bit and think, we might think it's not valid, we might ignore it, we might come up with all kinds of arguments as to why it wouldn't work. And once you're aware that confirmation bias comes into play, that can actually be really revealing. So if, for instance, you firmly believe that when I throw something in the bin, I get very anxious, then every time you throw something in the bin and get very anxious, you notice that. And you think, see, that proves it. Every time I throw something in the bin, I get very anxious. There's proof. And that's true and valid. But what confirmation bias does is it means that the times you throw something in the bin and you're fine, your brain kind of overlooks that and doesn't categorize that as evidence against the assertion that when you throw something in the bin, you get very, very anxious. So everything that proves your belief, you pay attention to, and everything that disproves your belief, you kind of ignore. And that means that we get stuck in the same patterns and we are afraid to do things differently. So again, I think beginner's mind, I think a bit of mindfulness, I think all of these things, paying attention and saying, okay, every time I throw something away, I get very, very anxious. Let's look at what happens. If I can find 10 things to throw away, I'm going to pay attention to my feelings after them all, whether they agree with my original thought or not. And I'm just going to experience it and just see, am I the same amount of anxious about all 10? Is it actually anxiety or might it be something else? Asking those questions and challenging yourself a little bit can be so valuable because it can, first of all, help to prove to yourself that the things you're afraid of aren't necessarily true, but it can also lead you into that place where what originally feels uncomfortable quite quickly feels comfortable. And another way to do this is to just challenge some of your beliefs a bit more directly. If you find yourself saying or thinking, every time I do this, then that happens. Every time I get rid of my child's baby clothes, I can't sleep because I feel so guilty, for instance, then question it a bit. Is it true that every time? What is that guilt actually about? Is it even guilt, or is it sadness that your child has grown up and you're not going to have those baby years again? Or is it frustration at the amount that you've actually got to deal with? Or is it confusion because you don't really know how to get rid of those things properly? Just ask yourself some gentle questions and start to explore this stuff a bit. Every time, especially if you start to have any belief with always in it, I always this or it always that, it's a good time to say, is it? And maybe expand your worldview a bit. And you can go further than just doing this with feelings. You can also do it with facts and knowledge. There's a really interesting podcast called You're Wrong About that picks topics that a lot of people have a very set belief about and actually goes into the facts and challenges them. And very often, you are indeed wrong about the thing you believed about the woman who sued McDonald's for getting burnt by their coffee, for instance. And similarly, reading things from perspectives you don't normally pay attention to. That might be politically, it might be about issues you care about. I'm not saying go and, you know, read white supremacist ramblings. It doesn't have to be extreme. I think we can fall into the trap of always thinking this has to be extreme. But often there's more nuance to an issue than any of us are aware of. And exploring that kind of thing, again, can just soften some of those really strict barriers and boundaries we might have around ideas.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support. 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way, so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code ACAST to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
The listener voicemail segment has a monthly theme to help you think of something to say. So for July, the question to answer is, what is a lesson you've learned recently? Maybe you've learnt that avoiding certain shops helps you to keep your acquiring under control, or that the world doesn't end if you run out of something you thought you needed. This is your opportunity to share your learnings with us. Have your say with your voice. If you want to record a voice message to me to potentially play on a future podcast episode, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail and leave a message. The topic for July is a lesson you've learnt recently. Let us know what you're thinking at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail. And we can also explore more widely life. We might have certain interests, like certain foods, enjoy certain types of music. But there can be a real benefit in trying different foods, listening to different music, learning about things you hadn't previously known about. Not only because it's interesting and makes you a well-rounded individual, but also because it proves to you in a tiny, tiny way, but all of those tiny, tiny ways add up, that you can think differently and you can do things differently and you can learn new things. I had a challenge recently to learn something new, and I wanted it to be not related to anything I was already interested in. I didn't want to end up learning something new about podcasting, or learning something new about my work, or learning something new about something I was already interested in. So where the challenge was to learn something new, I obviously made it a bigger challenge to learn something new about something I didn't know I cared about, and or that I didn't necessarily care about. So I had to rule out elephants, and I had to rule out things I already knew I liked. And I remembered a podcast that hasn't had any new episodes for a while, but that was out a few years ago and is still out there. I will link to every podcast and website and everything that I mention at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. So if you want to know more about You're Wrong About or Zen Habits or any of those things, they will all be linked to there. Just find the entry for this episode. So it's only a couple of years old, but this is internet time. But it's a BBC podcast called The Boring Talks, where they pick topics that are generally considered boring and get somebody to talk about them for half an hour. And every episode I've listened to, you end up surprisingly interested in the topic. So for my learning something new challenge, I remembered that the Boring Talks podcast existed and hunted it out again and listened to an episode about jigsaws. I was absolutely neutral about jigsaws. I didn't like or dislike them, but I also didn't know anything about them. And half an hour later, I had a whole reel of fun jigsaw facts. And obviously, that doesn't de-hoard my house. Obviously, that doesn't change my life overnight. But what it does do is remind me that there's a wide world out there, with people with all kinds of interests, and that every niche item in our house or every topic under the sun has a vast history and complex, nuanced understandings and controversies and all of this. And it reminds you that the world out there is a many and varied thing, and that when I get stuck in my, this is how I do this thing, and I do that to feel safe and comfortable, when I get stuck in that, I don't have to be stuck in it, because there's more out there. And it doesn't have to be a Boring Talks podcast. You could watch a documentary about something you don't know anything about. You could read a book about something you don't know anything about. There's all kinds of things you can learn about things you didn't even know there were things to learn about. And a slightly more high stakes, but only slightly, thing you can do if you want to expand your horizons a bit is to go somewhere new. Go to a museum. Go to a festival, even if you don't know any of the bands that are playing. Go and try a new hobby. You know, a lot of places have, like, you can book on a half a day pottery course or a day long cookery course. You could just pick something you know nothing about and go and learn about it, or hands on do something. You could take a class. Often, colleges and such have classes on for members of the public to take, and you could learn about all sorts. It could be really practical. You could finally do your maths GCSE 30 years after you left school. Or you could do an astrology course if you've always wondered what that was all about. It doesn't have to be functional. It doesn't have to have a purpose. It can just be learning for learning's sake. I think there's real value in that. And as we, as a society, have like commodified education and made it very expensive or very time consuming, we can stop seeing learning as something that's just valuable to do because it enriches us. But actually, there's massive value in it. Whether that's confidence, whether it's new skills, whether it's just expanding your horizons. And we can also just step out of our comfort zone a little just by listening more than we talk. Don't have a conversation and spend the entire time that somebody else is talking thinking of what you're going to say in response. Just listen. Just be present. Just be in the room and take in what other people are saying. You might be surprised at the things you learn about people. You might be surprised at perspectives you would never considered. And if you have rules about your stuff, and I have no doubt you have, I have many, ask yourself, why is that so? Is it still a good and useful rule for you? It might be that you have a rule that made sense 10 years ago, but you haven't really questioned it since, and it's now no use to you at all, but you stick with it because it's a rule, and it's worth prodding and poking those a bit. And there is a book that demonstrates a very extreme way of doing all of this. And I would not recommend fully following what the guy who wrote the book did, but it is such a fascinating way of approaching the world. The book is called Yes Man, by a guy called Danny Wallace, who had been very stuck in his life and realized he wasn't doing anything. he had been dumped and he just wasn't going anywhere, wasn't speaking to people. And so he decided that he was going to say yes to everything. Whatever was suggested, he had to say yes. And so he did, and he wrote a book about it. I seem to remember that he ended up going to somewhere like Morocco because somebody had, like a salesperson had asked him if he wanted to go, or he saw an ad saying, do you want to go to Morocco or something like that. He ended up in all kinds of jolly japes, and it's a very funny book, and it was made into a film with Jim Carrey, but it was based on this book called Yes Man. I haven't seen the film, but I have read the book. Danny Wallace is a very funny guy. And while I'm not suggesting doing that, it certainly can lead to chaos, as it did with him to some degree. Imagine, though, how freeing it would be as well. We don't have to say yes to everything, but maybe challenge yourself to say yes to one thing a day that you previously wouldn't have. Maybe try that. But basically, if you feel stuck, if you feel like your progress is slow, if you feel like you don't really know what to do next or where to go, if you feel like what was once helpful is now restrictive, turn your chair around, look at it from a different angle, and see what happens. I make this podcast because I think it's important. I started it as an outlet for myself, but it's become much more than that. And I hear from people all the time about how listening to me talk about my experience and interview specialists and experts is helping them. Hearing those stories makes the time and cost absolutely worth it. But if you want to help to ensure that the future of the podcast is sustainable, you can donate to help with costs. To send a one-off or recurring donation, just go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/donate. Thank you. So my top tip this week is from a podcast called Curious Freedom, which I will, of course, link to in the show notes. So have a listen to what Kirsty Ferugia has to say here.
So if you don't have a plan for what to do with the items you're decluttering, you may end up keeping them because you're unsure of where to donate or sell them. So I definitely recommend deciding on your piles beforehand and not making too many piles. So often we go into people's homes and they've got a stay or a keep pile, a donate pile, a sell pile, belongs in another room pile. But then their donate pile can be broken up into a million different piles as well. So it could be, oh, that's going to that friend, and that's going to that friend, and that's going to that charity shop, and that's going to that charity shop, and that's going to the local nursing home, and that's going to the local playgroup, and that's going to the local church. And I'm all for getting things out of your home. So if you have a very specific plan in place on how to get all of those donation categories out of your home as quickly as possible, then sure, have 10 different donation piles. However, if your goal is to get your home decluttered as quickly as possible, then my suggestion is to just donate it all to charity. Maybe don't even have a sell pile, because that's also adding to your overwhelm and adding to your to-do list. Am I trying to reduce your to-do list? So at the very start, I suggest having just a keep pile, a rubbish pile, and a donate pile, and not worrying about how you can separate out that donate pile into the 10 different categories that you could do. So it can really stall progress when you're trying to find the absolute best next home for things. And I have seen it time and time again where clients of mine have just not got to the getting things out of their home point because they've created too many piles and they're not seeing that person for another couple of months, or they don't know their address yet. So they have to, you know, there's too many steps involved before it can get out of your home. So I really recommend just getting it out to a charity shop. And then in the future, when you have more headspace and you can make more intentional decisions about where your future donations can go. But for just now, just get the unwanted items out of your house as quickly as possible.
And that's challenging. I get into the 80 gazillion different piles to donate to, 80 gazillion different places to make it all perfect trap. I definitely do. But she's right. It holds us back. It holds us back. Okay, thank you for listening, and I will speak to you next time. Thank you for listening to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. You can find more online at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at That Hoarder and on Facebook at Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder. To find out more about how you can support the podcast and the overall project, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/support and do subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. There may be links in this podcast that earn me money. This doesn't come at any extra cost to you if you ever make a purchase through the links, and it helps to support the future of the podcast.
Now on Broadway, An Enemy of the People is a New York Times critics pick. Jeremy Strong is one of the great actors of his generation, hails the Chicago Tribune. In a performance the Wall Street Journal praises as powerfully affecting and bitterly funny. Michael Imperioli sets off sparks, cheers the Hollywood Reporter. Victoria Pedretti is luminous, raves variety. From director Sam Gold and playwright Amy Herzog, An Enemy of the People is urgent, electrifying, and haunting, declares USA Today. An Enemy of the People on Broadway through June 16th only.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.